And as we turn to chapter 22, we are turning to a climactic point in the life of Abraham that has to do with the offering of Isaac. Chapter 22, verses 1 through 19. Of all the tests that Abraham faced, this has to be the most difficult. This has to be the most heartrending of all of them. And we will look at the section under four headings. Organizing 22, 1 through 19, we begin with a statement of the test. And we move to the obedience of Abraham to what he is commanded to do. And God makes a provision for Abraham and ends up, as a result of his obedience, with the blessing placed on him. The test is verses 1 and 2. The obedience is 3 through 10. The provision is verses 11 through 14. And the blessing is 15 through 19. First, reading about the test. The test revolves about the command to offer his son. Verse 1. It came about after these things that God tested Abraham and said to him, Abraham, and he said, Here I am. And he said, Take now your son, your only son whom you love, Isaac, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains which I will tell you. And you can see and you can identify why this would be a severe and a heart-rending test for Abraham. His obedience is verse 3. It is so simple. So Abraham rose early in the morning, saddled his donkey, and off he goes. The provision of God is in verse 13. As he is about to offer Isaac, it says, Abraham raised his eyes and looked, and behold, behind him a ram caught in the thicket by his horns. And Abraham went and took the ram and offered him up for a burnt offering in the place of his son. Finally, the blessing, and that is particularly in verse 17, where God says, Indeed, I will greatly bless you. I will greatly multiply your seed as the stars of the heaven. And so we're ready to begin then with our first point, the test. Genesis 22, verses 1 and 2. The test. 22, 1 and 2. And the first thing to note is simply the fact that testing was a major part of Abraham's life. Testing was a major feature of this man's life. For example, if you go back to chapter 12, and the very inception and the very calling of Abraham was a test. Now the Lord said to Abraham, Go from your country, from your relatives, and from your father's house. So the first test was with respect to his home and his family. Leave them. Leave your homeland. Leave your family. He was promised that he would have a seed, and he was made to wait 25 years. He was tested with respect to home and family. He was faced with 25 years of waiting. Third, in chapter 21, he had a son named Ishmael. And in chapter 21, he is commanded to expel his son. Chapter 21, verse 10 reads, Therefore she, Sarah, said to Abraham, Drive out this maid, that's Hagar, and her son, that's Ishmael, for the son of this maid shall not be an heir with my son Isaac. And the matter distressed Abraham greatly because of his son. So, testing was a major feature. And we come to the climactic text, or test, and that is chapter 22. Take your only son that you love and offer him. Second, under the test, is his preparation for it. And the preparation for the test is found in verse 1 when it says, it came about after these things that God tested Abraham. And notice the idea that God is the source, and God says, Abraham. And the preparation for the test is basically this: God is the source. It was not a matter of Abraham sitting out and meditating and said, well, you know, I think I'll do a nice thing. I think I'll give my son to God. Not the way it happened. It's not Abraham looking out there and seeing Canaanite custom and saying, well, the Canaanites will often offer in honor of their god or gods, we should say, they will often offer a child. And Abraham said, well, if the Canaanites do that, I ought to do that. That's not the way it happened. This is all from God. He is not imitating Canaanite custom. He is doing what God bids. Abraham is available to do whatever God bids. The words in verse 1 that say, here I am, are important. It's not that God had lost Abraham. When he says, here I am, that's an idiom in the Old Testament indicating two things. One, I'm ready to listen. I'm ready to hear. And second, I'm ready to act. So God says, Abraham, and Abraham responds by saying, here am I, or he responds by saying, my ears are open, and I am ready to obediently act on what you asked me to do. That is an interesting thing, because it is Abraham committing to do something before he knows what it is. And if you're married, you know that's one thing you never do if you're a male. You know, will you please promise to do this for me? And you soon learn you don't fall for that. I want to know what it is, because it's probably clean out the garage. So you don't make a committal beforehand. Abraham did. And God says, Abraham, and Abraham says, here am I. I'm ready to hear. Whatever you want me to do, I'm ready to do. Obedience was there before he was even called upon to do anything. The preparation is followed by the command. And the command is found in verse 2. And God emphasizes with regard to Isaac three things. God said, verse 2, take now your son, your only son, whom you love, Isaac, go to the land of Moriah, offer them there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I will tell you. So the three things that are said about Isaac are, number one, the relationship of Isaac. Two, the position of Isaac. Three, the value of Isaac. Number one, in verse 2, take now your son. And that emphasizes relationship. And the emphasis that is there is, this is the son for which he has waited 25 years. I mean, this was just not another kid. This was the son that we have prayed for, that we have waited for, that we have hoped for 25 years. Can you imagine that today? When was your first child born? After we'd been married 25 years. That's a long time. You've had many anniversaries, and Abraham is saying, and God is saying to Abraham, this son that you waited 25 years for, you've hoped for, you've prayed for, now I want you to make an offering of him. The fact that he had a son was a remarkable thing. The position of Isaac, he is your only son. And if you're a careful listener and reader, you say, uh-uh. And the reason you would say that is if you go back to chapter 16 of Genesis in verse 15, then you begin to question the meaning of the word only. What do you mean, only son? Well, chapter 26, or 16 rather, verse 15. So Hagar bore Abram a son. So only does not mean only in the sense of number. It is only, it is a word used, and the Hebrew word accords with it, is uniqueness. There is nobody who is your son who is like Isaac, is there? Isaac was born purely according to a promise. He had a position. He's your only son. And the value of the son is whom you love. Here is the test. Part of the test. Do you, Abraham, value the gift more than the giver? Do you value the gift more than the giver? And the test will be this. If the giver says, give the son, and you value the giver more than the gift, you will give your son. As simple as all of that. That is followed by, notice, by the way, also in verse 2, he's to go to the land of Moriah. That's a long way. 450 miles. It's a long way. Not 450 miles. About a three-day journey, rather. It's 450 miles elsewhere we'll come to. But this was a long ways for him to go. It was a three-day journey. Now, if you had been asked by God to offer your only son, and God says, not now. You got to take a trip. It'll take 3 days to get there. What would your mind be doing in those 3 days? You'd come to the end of day one and say, I don't know if I want to do this or not. And you'd have time to begin to think over that type thing. Why did God give him a three-day journey? And I think the answer is very simply, God wanted to give him time to vacillate because God wanted a quality decision. And quality decisions stick. You know, they're not impulsive. God did not want impulsive obedience. God wanted a type of obedience that stuck it out and was a lasting obedience. Now, with that, we then come to our second point, and that is the obedience of Abraham. Verses 3 through 10. And in verses 3 to 10, we will look at 8 features of Abraham's obedience. 8 features. Number 1, the immediacy of, and I'm going to put a line there because I don't want to write obedience 8 times. The immediacy of his obedience. And so God makes the command in verse 2. And verse 3, so Abraham rose early in the morning. I wouldn't have done that. Well, I'd never do that. Except to go to the bathroom and return to the bed. But nonetheless, he got up early in the morning. I would have said, hey, I want till noon with my son. I mean, give me a day. I'll obey, but not all this quick. Abraham, when commanded to offer his son, obeyed, and he obeyed immediately. There was no time period. There's no asking for time. God's command, then, was understood as, do it now. Offer your son. Do it now. Don't wait. And Abraham was able to buy that. I will do it now. Second, notice how simple his obedience was, the simplicity of obedience. And that is found also in verse 3. Notice he didn't clutter up his life. He did just what was necessary to do what God wanted him to do. So Abraham rose early in the morning, saddled his donkey, took two of his young men with him, and Isaac his son, split wood for the burnt offering, arose and went to the place of which God had told him. Abraham did not come along and say, God has asked me to do this dramatic thing, and in the meantime, you need to send your gifts and offerings, because if this does not support it, then I will go down the tubes. Abraham, very simply, in the passage, took the donkey to carry the wood, the servants to care for his needs and those of his son, and wood for the offering. Abraham did not take anything along that would complicate matters. I would have, so would you. I would have taken a lamb in case God changed his mind. I'd have been ready, you know, in case God could say, you know, I said, by the way, Lord, now that I'm at Moriah, I do have this lamb over here. Wouldn't that be just as acceptable as Isaac? I did remember to bring along a spare tire. Abraham took no spare tire. The donkey to carry the wood, the servants to meet their needs, and the wood for the burnt offering, and Isaac, and that's it. And he went to the place where God says. His obedience was simple. His obedience was uncomplicated. Third, consistency. Of his obedience. And the consistency is found in verse 4. And on the third day, Abraham raised his eyes and saw the place from a distance. Day 3 was the same as day 1. On day 1, he set off to make the sacrifice. He did the same on day 2, and he did the same on day 3. And the emphasis, therefore, lies on the absolute consistency of the obedience of Abraham. I do not recall it except dimly. Do you remember the movie, The Bible? That's been how long? Been a long time out, has it not? Do you remember when they come to Abraham, the picture that is portrayed there of Abraham pacing and saying, I won't, no, and all the struggle he goes through? That's not in the Bible. As far as the Bible is concerned, Abraham never struggled a moment. You see any struggle here? I don't see any struggle. He is absolutely and totally obedient in every way. If there was a struggle on the way to Mount Moriah over those 3 days, one thing we know for sure, God hides it. He never tells us of any struggle on the part of Abraham along the way. His obedience is consistent, and if there was any struggle, the most we can say is that God hides it. One of the features of obedience that we often appreciate is when you're in a tough situation, don't you appreciate support? I mean, somebody that says, I see where you're going, I understand what you're doing, and I really support you. And that's helpful. We're kind of attuned in our country, I think, to think that when someone's in a tragic situation, I heard someone a while back who had to face someone who had lost a very close loved one, say, I just, it's hard to go, I don't know what to say. And you want to say to them, what you say doesn't make any difference. You just need to be there. And in verse 5, notice that Abraham has another feature, or adds another feature to his obedience, and that is, number 4, the loneliness of his obedience. The loneliness of his obedience. 5a. Abraham said to his young men, stay here with the donkey, and I and the lad will go yonder and we will worship and return to you. And under the concept of loneliness, simply, Abraham had no human support. No human support. Even Isaac didn't know what was going to happen. Abraham obeyed, and he obeyed alone, and totally alone. Where's Sarah? She's right back there saying, go to it, Abe. Do it. Not at all. Sarah is not there. Abraham has no support whatsoever. It is a lonely obedience. 5. Beatitude of obedience. We often talk about an obedience that is sullen, which basically means, I'll do it, but I don't like it. Abraham had none of that. Notice that, as a matter of fact, and this is almost one of the interesting things about the characters of the Bible is God never hides the faults of His men. Abraham, for 25 years, the rascal, had said, Sarah, I'll pass you off as my sister. I will give you to the king so they won't kill me. In other words, I will sacrifice your virtue for my hide, is what he was saying. He did that for 25 years. He lied that way, we are told. And that was in our last lesson before, that he did that. And you look at that and say, well, what a disgraceful character. Well, look at the other side of it. This man is ordered to kill his son, and he finds it an occasion for worship. Can you beat that? I mean, I would say, you know, I'm supposed to kill my son. I'll do it. I don't like it, but I'll do it if I have to. But to worship? And in verse 5, you've got that concept. I and the lad will go yonder. We will worship and return to you. So his attitude is, I will honor God. Period. I will honor God. And he does so. Finds an occasion for worship. Now, there's one other thing that is unusual in verse 5. Can you catch it? Read it again. See if you can pick it up. Abraham said to his young men, stay here with the donkey, and I and the lad will go yonder and... Get that pronoun? Should be I, shouldn't it? Because he's going to offer Isaac, and dead men don't walk. He doesn't say, I will worship and return to you. He says, we will worship, and the pronoun we also goes with the verb return. We will return. And that focuses on the faith of his obedience. Now, how can he say, we will return, when he knows good and well he's going out there to kill his son? How does he know he is going to return? Well, Hebrews 11 gives us the reason. Hebrews 11. Hebrews 11. Now let's look first of all at the conflict that he is in. The conflict that he is in comes off of chapter 21 and verse 12. God said to Abraham, do not be distressed because of the lad and your maid. Whatever Sarah tells you, listen to her, for through Isaac your seed shall be named. So the seed will be through Isaac. That's chapter 21. and verse 12. Chapter 22 says, in essence, kill him. Now that is the conflict that Abraham is facing. And to all human logic, that is an absolute contradiction. The seed will be through this boy, Isaac. Kill him. And if that doesn't introduce contradiction, I don't know what does. Do dead men have children? I don't think so. How are you going to put that together? And that's exactly the test that Abraham is facing. And the test from the human standpoint would say, God doesn't know what he's doing. If the seed is through Isaac, I can't kill him because dead men don't have children. If he's dead, there can be no seed. This can't be. And yet, there's his dilemma. Believe the promise and disobey the command. No. Obey the command and frustrate the promise. No. Believe the promise, disobey the command, because that's the only way it'll work. Obey the command, and I invalidate the promise. Can you handle that? I mean, that's the dilemma. That's where he's at. And God labels all of this and says, Abraham, test. I'm testing you. And the test says, will you surrender your logic to me? Do you believe that my ability to do what I say is bigger than your mind? Do you think that what I am able to perform is bigger than human reason? Or will you cave in? Will you believe logic? Or will you believe me? And that's exactly where the man is. I know of no test any bigger than that. This is the pill that will save you. Flush it down the toilet. Doesn't work that way. It's got to go in me to help me. And that's where Abraham is, and that's what God is facing this man with. This is the climactic test, and probably the faith of Abraham is a faith that is probably the biblical example of really believing God. Well, Abraham was a strange guy. You know how his mind worked? I don't know what yours has been doing between this and this. But you may already know, let me take it the Abraham way. God said the seed would be through Isaac. God said, kill Isaac. If I kill Isaac to fulfill the promise, God will raise him from the dead. Therefore, in Genesis, we will come back. And Abraham expected to slay the son, offer the son, and God would resurrect him, and they would come back. Hebrews 11, verse 17. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac. And if you don't think mental attitude is important, look at that. As you well know, he didn't have to slay his son. God says he offered him. Mental attitude of willingness overcomes everything. Mental attitude is everything. Offered up Isaac, and he who received the promises was offering up his only begotten son, in which it was he to whom it was called, Genesis 21, verse 12, in Isaac your descendants shall be called. He considered that God is able to raise men even from the dead, which he also received him back as a type. And so as he went out there, Abraham believed this. He believed that if I offer Isaac, God is true to his word, and if his word says the seed will be through Isaac, God will raise him up. And that is the type of faith that this man exhibits back in chapter 22. 7. notice the God-centeredness. Of his obedience, verses 6 through 8. Read with me verse 6. And Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it on Isaac his son. And he took in his hand the fire and the knife. So the two of them walked on together. And of course, as they walked, Isaac had a question. I see the wood. I see the knife. I don't see a lamb. So verse 7, Isaac spoke to Abraham his father and said, My father. And he said, Here am I. Here I am, my son. And he said, Behold, I see the fire and the wood. Where is the lamb for the burnt offering? And Abraham said, You are. Didn't say that, did he? He said in verse 8, Abraham said, God will provide. And that focuses on the God-centeredness of the whole thing. When Isaac says, Who is the sacrifice? Abraham does not say, You are, but says, God will provide. The best approach to any question is to focus on God. You got a question? God will take care of it. The other practical lesson that's involved in those verses is the fact that that honesty is not equivalent to total disclosure. Abraham was honest, but he didn't tell everything. And that is an important lesson, is a practical lesson of life. You can be honest without total disclosure. Total disclosure can be disaster. Eighth feature, the completeness of his obedience. Verses 9 and 10. Then they came to the place of which God had told him, and Abraham built an altar there and arranged the wood and bound his son Isaac and laid him on the altar on top of the wood. Do you see anything remarkable in that verse? We've been talking about Abraham. Be Isaac for a minute. Abraham would have had a tough time with me. You know, if you don't want to be tied, it's tough. I just remember from years at the police department that one thing you learn, one little old 75-year-old lady that doesn't want to be arrested and handcuffed can be a match for six policemen. And Isaac is in the same context. I mean, you tied up. I mean, Abraham is the old man. Isaac is the young man. If I'd been Isaac, I'd have done the 100-yard dash in record time the minute he started to put that cord around me. So we got to say, if Abraham's faith is strong, so is Isaac's. Where did Isaac get that kind of faith? Well, from his education and his school. Got it from his dad. His dad was a man who believed the Lord, and he taught his son to believe the Lord. And consequently, Isaac has great, great faith. It's interesting, they're both supported by the same promise. I mean, can you imagine what these men thought? Abraham raises the knife. In Isaac shall your seed be. And Isaac looks up and sees the knife ready to come down, and the promise comes back. In Isaac, I'm Isaac. Pinch me. Yeah, I'm Isaac. Shall the seed be? So you have an enormous faith on the part of both of them. But the remarkable thing is this. God said, In Isaac shall your seed be. Can you leave the outworking of that promise to God or not? And they both did. Notice, by the way, in verse 10, it says, Abraham stretched out his hand and he took the knife, not to offer, to kill him, to slay him. It's very interesting that when you come to the book of Hebrews does not say, in chapter 11, verse 17, that Abraham slew his son or killed his son. It says he offered him. And the accuracy is involved in that. Abraham was willing to do so, and God took the mental attitude equivalent to the act. So the test, really, in chapter 22, when you come down to verse 10, the test lay in not knowing how God would work things out. How many times have you been in a test, or have we been in a test, and you look at it and you say, I just don't, what's the next word? See how this can work out. And Abraham faced that. I just don't see how this can work out. But the point was, it didn't make any difference what he saw. God saw. And if you go back to the preceding verses, verse 8, Abraham said, God will provide. Notice the word provide has a number 1 by it, and you take it to the margin, and what do you have in the margin? See. I don't see, but God sees. And that's all we need, and that is the complete, total obedience on the part of Abraham. That is followed now with the interruption and the provision of God. And the provision is in 11 through 14. The angel appears as he raises the knife. The angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. And he said, Here am I. And he said, Do not stretch out your hand against the lad and do nothing to him. Notice, God's provision is not only adequate, it is timely. God provides help at the moment needed. Now, that's a bit biblical truth. Go to Hebrews 4. I don't think there's anybody but what has at one time or other sat back and you anticipate, well, if this would happen, I just don't know what I would do. I don't think I can handle it. Can you think of any situation in your life that could happen to you in the way of a tragedy that right now as you sit you would say, I couldn't handle it? That's always true. Because God's help is timely. And God's help is provided when needed, not before needed. And so Hebrews 4:16, let us therefore draw near with confidence to the throne of grace, that we may receive mercy and may find grace to help, period. No. May find grace to help in time of need. So notice God's help and gracious provision is always a timely matter. Going back to Genesis 22. And now verse 12. Do not stretch forth your hand against the lad. Do nothing to him. For now I know that you fear God or respect God, since you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me. And the principle involved there is twofold. Number one, obedience of heart was counted as obedience in action. You were willing, therefore you did it. And number two, Abraham kept his son by surrendering his son. Is that remark often made? He is no fool who surrenders that which can be lost for that which cannot be lost. And Abraham surrendered his son, and in the surrender of his son, he kept his son. Verse 13, Abraham raised his eyes and looked, and behold, behind him a ram caught in the thicket by his horns. And Abraham went and took the ram and offered him up for a burnt offering. And here's a major biblical doctrine, substitution, in the place of his son. And the doctrine of substitution is in essence the gospel. That the gospel is the good news that Jesus Christ, in my place, died and took the guilt that was mine to be his, the penalty for sin that was mine to be his, and he took it on himself. And Abraham, verse 14, called the name of the place, the Lord will provide. And there's the lesson. God sees and God's provided. Oh, by the way, if you would go to Mount Moriah, there was another death that occurred very close to Mount Moriah. the cross. And the cross, therefore, was the same type of thing with the same meaning, that it was a substitution for sin. Leaving the provision and completing the chapter is the blessing. 15 through 19. Now, essentially, in verses 15 through 19, everything that was in the Abrahamic covenant is repeated, except for one added item, reading with verse 15. Then the angel of the Lord called Abraham a second time from heaven and said, "By myself I have sworn, declares the Lord, because you have done this thing and have not withheld your only son, indeed I will greatly bless you, I will greatly multiply your seed as the stars of the heaven," we had that before, "and as the sand of the sea which is on the seashore," we've had that before, "and your seed shall possess," and this is new, "the gate of their enemies." Remember, we talked about the gate several times ago. The gate was the place where the deliberations, it was a city hall. And to possess the gate of enemies is simply saying that Israel will prevail over her enemies. They are his chosen people, and this anticipates the conquests of Joshua. This anticipates the yet-to-come future when Israel will be victorious. And the chapter then concludes with a short account of Nahor, Abraham's brother's sons, down through verse 24. But in verse 19, "So Abraham returned to his young men, and they arose and went together to Beersheba, and Abraham lived at Beersheba." And our Father, we're thankful for this wonderful example of faith. How arrogant we are that we should erect in our minds a contradiction between the competence of God and our silly logic. God promised that through Abraham the seed would be, and then said, "Kill the seed." And that seems so irrational, so illogical, so out of place, and yet it is your word, and Abraham believed it. And Abraham was able to say, "I surrender my logic. I surrender my son. I surrender everything I have to the ultimate, infinite wisdom of God." May we learn this lesson, at least in part, in Christ's name.